And welcome to this edition of Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. It's a pleasure to come to you again this Saturday and every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, streaming live on the internet as well at richarddugan.com. And some might think, with my guests coming up today, I should really be worried that this guy is going to figure me out. He's going to put a label on my forehead, and I will be taken in a straitjacket off to the funny farm. My guest, he probably won't do that, especially because of the title of his book, A Course in Happiness. And that wouldn't make me very happy. Marty Horowitz is my guest. He's a professor of psychiatry at the University of California, San Francisco, director of the Center on Stress and Personality at Langley Porter Psychiatric Institute. Written a bunch of books, including A Course in Happiness. Marty, it is great to have you on the program today.
Good to talk with you.
And I'm certainly hoping that the psychoanalysis will be kept to a bare minimum today.
I think I can promise that.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about this work. Now, when I first saw the title, as I mentioned to you before we went on the air, it smacked of A Course in Miracles, and many people are familiar with that. Tell me what the similarities as well as the differences are between your book, A Course in Happiness, and the other aforementioned.
Well, three things on that. One, I don't deal with miracles. I deal with reason on handling emotionally stressful topics, so that I'm really trying to present a course on self-development by reason thinking about self and others and issues like intimacy and integrity. So I use the word course in a couple of different ways. One, my kind of professorial use, that is, the book does have examples, but it has lesson plans and it has teaching points. So in a way, it's not a fast read, although some people tell me they read it twice fast to get the stories, and then slowly to get the lesson plans and undertake them. And the second way I mean the word course is like the course of a ship, that you have to find your way to navigate, if you're a sailor especially, through what winds are available, but any kind of ship, how to get through the dangerous passages. So while the title is A Course in Happiness, I think it is unique in dealing with mastery of stress.
And we seem to have a lot of stressors out there, things that we get stressed over or that we stress ourselves over, and we don't even need to go through any kind of a list. What we need to do is find a better way of not allowing those stressors to do just that to us, because I know that there is one specific outcome of stress on the human body that I remember looking into about 15 years ago, that stress actually causes weight gain. And so if an individual, let's say, is looking to lose weight and they're sort of bent out of shape over the weight they've got and they can't seem to get rid of it, so they start stressing, and so they kind of go back in the opposite direction. They don't lose the weight.
Yes, it certainly is a factor in many things, including onset of aging and other health factors, and sheer, when it gets to be too intense, sheer mental anguish.
So is it strictly a changing of perception of those events outside ourselves that we stress ourselves over? What is the process here? What are we looking at?
Well, we're looking at both positive and negative psychology. So a lot of books on self-help and psychology, and especially with a word like happiness in the title, a lot of those are presenting scientific findings on positive psychology, how to focus attention on comforting and soothing and restorative factors. As I say, my approach is to endorse that. I cover 10 activities that come from positive psychology in the last chapter, but the last chapter follows the penultimate chapter, which deals with surviving hammer blows or making a passage through stormy waters. Mm-hmm. So the negative things have to deal with trying to provide the potential readers with a map of how you take on those intrusive worries and learn to master them by a series of dose-by-dose efforts. That's why the lesson plans are there.
Okay, so this is an opportunity for people to maybe take De-Stressor 101 by getting a copy of the book, A Course in Happiness. My guest is Marty Horowitz. He is, again, a professor of psychiatry at University of California, San Francisco. And we're going to talk more about some of his other works as well, but we're going to continue talking about this as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Don't go away.
Plans without execution are only dreams. At Monarch Wealth Strategies, we follow a disciplined approach to wealth management. It is our pleasure to be of service to you. Come experience the integrity, competence, and royal service provided by Monarch Wealth Strategies, a financial services firm founded by myself, Vanessa Patterson, and Aaron Clark. We are at 1501 State Street, a building shared with Community West Bank. Execute your plans today. Contact us at 564-0800, that's 564-0800, or monarchwealthstrategies.com.
Have you lost direction in life? Do you constantly worry or give to others but deny your own heart? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
You have a message that others can benefit from. A meditation to share, a talk to give that you want heard by more than just those present. A workshop, seminar, presentation with speakers whose information, insight, and inspiration can help others to break through to their highest potential and purpose. Making a quality recording is the first step to making it available, and fast forward is the right direction. They'll bring the recording studio to you. Your message is important. It needs to be recorded by professionals who share your passion and want to provide quality recording to those who want and need to hear it. Call 805-708-9804 to take that first step. 805-708-9804. Call Fast Forward for all your recording needs on location and in studio. 805-708-9804.
Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And yeah, we all have our fears, our concerns, our worries, and the statistics usually say that roughly, I guess it's 90 to 98% of what we worry about, we stress over, never happens. But it's that other 2 to 10% that we end up having to deal with. And yet, sometimes it isn't as bad as we've made it out in our own minds. My guest today is going to help us to sort through some of those things. Marty Horowitz, author of many books, including his latest, A Course in Happiness. And Marty, it's great that you've taken the time to join us here on the program. What was it that the catalyst that sent you in this particular direction? I mean, was your life so full of stress that you said, I've got to find some answers, and the next thing you knew, you were a professor of psychiatry?
That probably is true in retrospect, but I didn't think it at the time. I just found my way into studying stress because in the study of particular traumatic events, we can learn how the mind gradually digests the memory. So it goes from kind of an intrusive, unwanted, unbidden repetition to a part of one's own narrative life story. So it seemed like having a handle on knowing what the external event was, let's say an automobile accident or the loss of a loved one, one could then see how the person went through a process of integrating that. And so research on that actually led to the diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder and some treatments for it. And one thing led to another, and that's how academics go.
And how long have you been researching this particular area?
Ever since I got out of the Navy, which was in, let's see, 1964.
Can you tell me how things have changed over the last 30, 40 years in this particular field? Because obviously we continually gather new information. Science and biology comes up with new explanations for why things happen to us. It isn't always what we were told, you know, 15 or 20 years ago because what we didn't have the technologies and so forth. So how has this process for you changed in terms of being able to deal with stress?
Well, for me personally, one of the beneficial side effects of doing psychotherapy and psychoanalysis and teaching people to help people do a range of therapeutics from brief to long has really honed my own self-observational skills and allowed me to help my family and others. So it's a great field in that there's a lot of fringe benefits.
And those fringe benefits are?
Well, being able to stand on one's two legs and having a lot of courage and stamina to get through stuff that at first seems overwhelming. Because you know it can be done and you have an idea how it can be done.
Do you at all subscribe to the philosophy that whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger as far as dealing with stress? Because that just doesn't, sometimes that just doesn't seem to work for a lot of folks.
Well, Nietzsche said that, mm-hmm. and I don't think it's true. But you can master stress, and if you do, you learn that you can. So that can do a great deal for feelings of self-competence. And also we know in studies of older people, comparing older people with younger people, all things being equal, older people can handle losses better than younger people because they've been through it. And they've learned how to go through it, and they can be a confidant and a help to other people. So it's a strength gained with maturity.
So would you say that the more of these kinds of stressors that we face in our lives, the more well-adjusted we might be? Because there are those who keep going through the same stressors. They get worse and worse and worse until they go right off the end.
Right. There can be a cumulative negative effect and there can be a cumulative positive effect. And a lot depends on what one does with what cards one's dealt. And, well, of course, that was part of my motive to write A Course in Happiness, to kind of have a legacy of my experiences. So that the important things are not to give up with an idea, well, I've had an unusually stressful or traumatic life, so I'm a hopeless person. That's, of course, a tremendous error. And the other thing is to realize that there's a kind of bandwidth of stress. We need some to make us grow. I mean, that is, we're a species that has evolved through all kinds of hardships and has learned to handle it. So the primates that didn't aren't with us today.
Right. It is said that unless, for example, our immune systems are stressed or challenged every so often, they become weak. And so when something really severe comes along, we can't handle it. And, of course, then we're not here anymore.
Yeah.
So, as you say, it seems as though we need those. I'm wondering, do we need, we don't need to create any in our lives. They kind of come along whether we want them or not sometimes.
Right. There's no need to go out and manufacture stress. The human predicament will provide everyone an ample portion on their plate.
A Course in Happiness is the topic on the table today. You have consulted with a lot of individuals, corporations, including government agencies, and it just seems to me that even within the government, there's got to be an enormous amount of stress going on there, not just because of the current circumstances today, but I mean, just it always seems to be that there's stress going on there because you just never know which way the wind is going to blow politically and so forth. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found within those circles? And is it that much different than, say, in the private sector?
Well, it's certainly in the military, because I went on consulting for various branches, and also I'm a student of military history to an extent. There's the same tendency to groupthink as there is in corporate circles, so that even the history of World War II was fraught with very serious errors in judgment on both sides that weren't simple rational miscalculations from inadequate intelligence, but were irrational choices that weren't self-identified and didn't permit correctives. Certainly with the current economic disaster, a lot of that, it's getting to be pretty clear as information comes out, was due to frankly irrational thinking by groups of people in a financial venture. Motivated, of course, by the wish to get bonuses and the glory of big positive gains, but willing to take risks that were rationally foreseeable, which were ignored by a kind of groupthink. Rose-colored glasses effect. So that's what I like to do in consulting with corporations or universities or military groups is just to be a kind of independent thinker that's a capable eye at identifying the signals of irrational thinking. I don't mean psychotic thinking. I don't mean blatantly.
Right.
Delusional. I mean, just going through a process that doesn't have enough backward checking to see if the steps were logical and to make sure that emotional hopes don't cloud the lens of clear thinking.
We're in the midst of the holidays right now, and certainly there are people listening who don't like them because they bring up not only bad memories, but they bring up those stressors of going out and having to, and this is the way it's perceived, having to purchase the gifts for all of the people on this list that they've made up, preparing for the relatives to arrive or preparing to go to the relatives, the Christmas dinner, the New Year's dinner, and all of the various activities surrounding this time of the year. I'm guessing, because, and I've been doing interviews on this subject for a number of years, it doesn't seem like it's gotten any better, though, as much as we've talked about it.
Well, I think it is an aspect of human striving. We're all eager to love, and we're eager to be loved, and mm-hmm. relationships are the groundwork of our pursuit of happiness, which doesn't mean they succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the holidays kind of symbolize a withdrawal temporarily from preoccupation with work and economics and a refocus on the bonds that tie us together as a culture, a community, a family, and so forth. And especially in the United States, we've spun off so much in a sense, loss of central communities, that it's hard for many people to gain the connections they desire. And they don't have enough experience with, let's say, a small group of family to have ironed out the ambivalence, the differences, the frustrations, and the pining for more closeness that many people have. And so the holidays brings that all to the fore.
Now, we usually want to keep this radio program fairly positive and uplifting as much as we can, but also to acknowledge the realities that are out there, which we hear about at the top of every hour in the newscasts. You have, in your area up in San Francisco, you have a structure, the San Francisco Bay Bridge, the Golden Gate, that is. We have down here in Santa Barbara, in this area, we have a span, the Cold Springs Bridge. And people use these bridges for things that they were never intended to be used for, to work out their stresses. And it is a final solution, as they see it, that it's the only solution, as they see it. And it seems as though no matter what we do, for example, there are those who want to secure these structures so that people can't do it. Well, people are still going to find ways to do themselves in if they've gotten to that level. Doesn't matter whether the Golden Gate or the Cold Springs is available. If they've reached that point of no return, as it were, it's very unlikely that anything is going to stop them. Is that a fair assessment?
No, I don't think it is.
Okay.
I think people have different states of mind, and sometimes people may have a dark, hopeless, helpless state, or one in which they're just terribly bitter about the world and their own future place in it. And that's a temporary state. And if there can be like a barrier against suicide, then the person has a chance of getting out of that state, and usually often does. So in the Golden Gate Bridge, there's now going to be a barrier against suicide, and I'm pretty sure it's going to save some lives, because people are not inevitably going to commit suicide because they have an impulse or a plan to do so in a given state of mind.
So, in other words, that momentary surge of self-destruction is just that, and that it is possible that if they are given that extra few moments, if you will, they may not follow through. They may actually start to have maybe a sparks of rationale that say, wait a minute, maybe it's not quite as bad as I'm making this out to be.
Right. The state may be quite painful,
mm-hmm.
and maybe one may be one desperately wants to get out of. However, there are other ways to do it that give the person a chance to make a hard work kind of miracle to occur by working on themselves, getting help, getting professional help,
mm-hmm.
and establishing some new connections with other people from the pit they felt they'd dropped into.
If you've just joined us, my guest is Marty Horowitz, the author of A Course in Happiness, Mastering the Three Levels of Self-Understanding that Lead to True and Lasting Contentment. And you can go to martyhorowitz.com. That's the website. You can purchase the book at Amazon as well as at his website. And we encourage you to do so. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. And we're talking about, obviously, you know, the subject matter can start to get a little heady, but what I'm going to jump into now, Marty, is those three levels. Let's talk about those three levels as we move forward in this program and define them for our listeners and see where we are.
Well, I'll start with one that I associate with the Golden Gate Bridge, actually.
Okay.
I have a couple of chapters on each of those three I's, intimacy, integration, and integrity. The first one kind of deals with how to do it, and the second deals with obstacles to doing it. And so in the chapters on integrity, I open one of those two chapters with my love for the Golden Gate Bridge. It's just a great bridge. I cross it twice a day, and it's always beautiful. And if one walks across it, looks at it, one sees that not only is it a marvelously strong, capable structure, but the extra embellishments were made to make it truly gorgeous. It's really a masterpiece of human achievement, almost in every little detail. So that's what I mean by integrity. It all goes together. It all holds together, and you can trust it. And that relies on intimacy and and self in a way that's brought together. That is, if one is to have integrity as the head of a family, as a husband and wife, as a father and child, mother and child, or as the treasurer of an organization or anything like that, it consists of shared values that are gradually sorted out and shared, and that you can rely on being continuous over time. So in a marriage, for example, when a marriage has two people of integrity in it, they can each get plenty mad at each other or frustrated or have a fight, but they are relying on the integrity of the structure of we. That is, that they've developed enough shared values that they know that this momentary severe discontent is going to pass, and they're going to have a restored period of contentment with each other. So integrity then in the book, I go into lesson plans and details on sorting it out, mm-hmm. but it has to do with the balance between self-serving aims and we-serving aims. One of the other I's is intimacy, of course, and I try and deal with the obstacles to intimacy and how one develops maturity about intimacy. I mean, most people in their first romantic relationship early in their teens or late in their teens or early in their 20s go into things with a fantasy expectation of what it's going to be like, and they find the fantasy in the other person, and it often leads to true love. However, by the time that true love is matured later on, they have a lot of more realistic understanding of what it takes to, put aside one's own urges and empty the garbage, mm-hmm. and pick up after oneself or make the bed or whatever the arguments initially are, they learn how to solve those. And so envy of the other person is, of course, a common obstacle to that, and also carrying over grievances from childhood and expecting a marriage to make up for bad parenting, as one has perceived it in childhood, those are common obstacles. So I deal with stories about that kind of thing. And then the first part of the book deals with putting the parts of the self together, because we all come into young adulthood, at least, with almost different, sometimes even contradictory, self-images or goals that one parent set, competing with goals another parent set, competing with goals we want, competing with goals that authority structures said we should have, and sorting all that out and developing an inner harmony is usually the first part of being able to be a good partner to establish an intimacy. So that's why I start the book with those, mm-hmm. those lesson plans, and then deal later on with the harder stuff.
Now,
not that those aren't plenty hard.
For some of us, they're very hard. Yeah. Some of us, it's the intimacy issue that is the most difficult. For others, they couldn't integrate if their lives depended upon it because they have been loners, which is usually the story we hear of those people who go, as the phrase has come to be known, postal on society. He was so lonely and he was always by himself. And it's like, you know, if you've heard that enough times and you have anybody in your neighborhood like that, befriend them and make them no longer lonely. They won't come after you and maybe they won't go postal on you. If you've just joined us, we are talking with Marty Horowitz. His book is called, excuse me, I'm about to choke up here. A Course in Happiness, Mastering the Three Levels, as we just discussed, of self-understanding that lead to true and lasting contentment. Now, the subtitle on the cover, the word contentment, I take it is associated with happiness. So even though you've certainly mentioned it as we've talked in the last 30 minutes or so, can you define, sort of in a Webster's fashion, what contentment and happiness are from your perspective, from the book, and what the differences are and or the similarities? I mean, are they different to you in this context?
In a way, happiness is an extremely ambiguous word. And people have written about it since the dawn of printing. And chanted it probably before that.
If you're happy and you know it, clap your hands.
Clap your hands. And in that nursery rhyme, which I use as the front piece for one of the chapters, happiness means a kind of joyous state, and that's not really what the word contentment means. Contentment has to do with happiness as extending over time and being a possibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, one isn't going to be content every minute of the day,
okay,
and every day of the week and every week of the month and every year of one's life. And one's not going to feel necessarily serene when facing old age or incapacity. But it is possible to have a relative stability and equilibrium possible that one knows can be regained. That's what I'm calling contentment.
Okay.
Like, if you remember the Declaration of American Independence from Great Britain, it said, we hold these rights to be unalienable, and the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yes.
It didn't say we're entitled to happiness.
Right. We're entitled
apparently,
to the pursuit.
Apparently, the story is that it did say that, and someone put in a little insertion there, pursuit of. Because we're not entitled to happiness, but we are entitled to the freedom and liberty to pursue it. And that's what A Course in Happiness is about, how to take a somewhat reasoned course in pursuing one's own contentment over a long time. I suppose the book is best for people in their late 20s, 30s, early 40s.
Now, that's interesting, because I was just thinking about our present technological society. I am not a texter. I'm not a tweeter, okay? I'm barely able I don't want to say barely able to navigate, because I can navigate websites just fine, thank you very much, but I don't like going to these social networks, web pages, because there's no sociality involved. There's no connection. You and I are being more social right now, being, 500 to 700 miles away, even we're still in the same state, conversing in this fashion, than I believe we ever would be if we were doing it through Twitter or Facebook or texting on a cell phone.
Right.
And
no, those things basically are saying hi.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm here. Or that greeting, which is now repeated in the movie Avatar, I see you. It's a recognition saying, I'm reflecting that you exist.
I'm going to have to see that movie. But let's talk about that, say, in relationship to even the first two items that we talked about, integration and intimacy, and then how that relates to how we handle stress. I'm actually going to ball a couple of things in here, especially what you quoted from the Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It seems as though the folks who this book is geared towards, as you have stated, the 20, 30, 40-year-olds, seem as though they're entitled to certain things, and that they're going to get them whether the rest of society likes it or not, and this is just the way it is. So can we talk a little bit about our technological society, and is it creating more stress, or due to the lack of integration and intimacy, it's actually creating less stress, but less of a society?
Well, I remember reading about what television shows were watched the most, and this is back maybe 20-odd years ago, but in the Middle East, the most popular television show was from the United States. It was Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And that series just showed rich people involved in corruption, greed, graft, and all kinds of soap opera type conundrums. And but it's like what you're saying. What we see on television and the movies is the sets, and the sets are showing opulence and a high standard of living. Even, being a psychiatrist, I see movies about psychiatrists. Their offices are always 3 or 4 times mine in size, and much nicer.
Wood grain walls and the whole
if
bit.
If I was headed for envy and jealousy, I'd say, how come those guys have good offices, and I have this university office with small spaces and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So entitlement is really increased by advertising. even latent advertising, not present in the commercials. And so people are spurred on by a wish to get better cosmetics and better material things. And those really, while they're nice, they're a source of enjoyment, sometimes increase in attractiveness to others, but they're not the ingredients of true happiness. Those have to do with self and relationships. And so people can enter, like, a marriage, for example, and then feel that they've been trapped because they're not getting what they thought they were entitled to from the other person. Or they may feel the other person is overpowering and corrupting them because they're spending money on what they want and not what the self wants. And there's all kinds of these issues that kind of smother the possibility of really enjoying the presence and closeness and commitment and caring of the other person and helping that to develop.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, maybe the answer is no, and that it isn't the technology. We've always had these issues within us, but the technology sort of seems to magnify it a little bit.
Well, it does. I mean, like, I like movies, and certainly movies and television shows tend to depict romantic engagements, and they also depict glory, like glory from being a warrior, in the hero kind of mythology. And so when people see that over and over again, especially younger people begin to see that as some kind of standard that's attainable rather than an ideal that's an illusion. I mean, we enjoy the illusion. We enjoy fantasy, and I think that's good. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. But it's important to know that we were indulging ourselves in a fantasy and that reality can be a little bit different. It's like those car commercials, Don't do this at home.
Yeah, exactly. Marty Horowitz is my guest. A Course in Happiness is his latest work, and we're talking about just that, being happy, being contented. You're not entitled to happiness, but you certainly are entitled to the pursuit thereof, at least according to the Declaration of Independence of the Constitution of the United States of America. As a matter of fact, I remember memorizing that thing and probably could recite it even today, but I will not bore our listeners with that. I will not deter them from their pursuit of happiness by any means. But different things make each one of us happy. Different things make each one of us contented. And it is up to each of us as individuals to seek those things out. I'm curious as to how you go about encouraging somebody to do just that.
Well, I mentioned the three I's, which I begin the book, and then I imagine a reader saying, okay, easier written about than me accomplishing it. How do I get through the obstacles to doing that? So that I then deal with that in several chapters. And then I deal with the really hard stuff, like loss and death and disability and some examples. And I didn't want to end the book like that.
That's kind of depressing.
It seemed like a good pyramid. You know, you start on a base of learning the early lessons, then you learn the harder lessons. So I decided to end the book on 10 ways to maintain happiness and to use that as a vehicle for reviewing some of the obstacles I had discussed earlier. So I can go through those. I won't go through the obstacles because that would make it complicated.
Okay.
But I think... starting with, well, I'll do it like David Letterman does.
The top ten, yes, okay.
I'll start at 10, you know, not the lowest part of the list.
Okay.
Is to be fully present and enjoy satisfying sensations. The sun on your shoulder, 72 degrees in Santa Barbara, a tulip unfolding, good food, wine, everything in moderation, that kind of thing. These, by the way, aren't original. You know, I'm just summarizing what we know from surveys in positive psychology, what does give people topics to think of, can I get more of these? Number nine would be to enjoy group memberships and to be able to give and receive. A lot of people expect those to be really great. My own father was, benefited, and my son, as a matter of fact, both benefit from being members of the Masons, and they just enjoyed the group. And that for them was a really good group. But there's a lot of people who are quite lonely and may not be able to maintain membership in those kinds of groups, but they can still feel a group membership by having a cup of coffee in a coffee shop. Doesn't mean they have to talk to anyone.
Right.
Just being with other people is important and enjoyable.
Okay.
If one's not expecting too much of it.
That's true. Yeah.
And then the number eight would be maintaining an attitude to embrace diversity. So you see people who dress differently or have different cultural ways of expressing affection, even stand at different distances from each other, and to regard that as interesting rather than to be repulsed by it, which seems to be a danger to the sense of community. And the seventh would be to be able to have a not-too-lonely, calm solitude without feeling bitterness that one is alone, but be able to enjoy solitude. A lot of people are just too busy to have time to themselves and to learn to find that as a relaxing restoration.
You know, I actually had an experience where I stayed for, I guess it was a week, something like that, at a retreat center north of Phoenix, Arizona in Black Canyon City. It was run by, I think, a Franciscan group. And you were given a room. You brought your own food and bedding and these kinds of things, but you had the room and so forth. And, I mean, if you wanted to bring a TV, certainly you could do so, but they certainly didn't recommend it. My issue wasn't so much with the being alone as much it was with the fear of being left there. See, I at that time, I did not drive, so I was driven up there and basically left, and this was my decision. So I had to get over the fear of being disconnected and isolated in that respect. So that's part of that as well, is we will find those places where we want to be by ourselves, and it's like, have I disconnected too much?
Oh, right. I can identify with that. In fact, in A Course in Happiness, I have a couple of stories from my own experiences when I was 21 years old and took a job as a patrolman for Fish and Wildlife in Alaska, which made me really low man on the totem pole, so they just parked me. Parked me somewhere where there was nobody else. And I had exactly that reaction. Well, when are you coming to get me?
And do I have enough food and water to make it through until you do?
Right.
Yeah. So let's go on to number six.
Number six is to appreciate your own achievements. Now, that sounds like it's easy to do, you know, you crow for yourself kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's not. It turns out that people often aren't appreciating their own achievements because they had set excessively high standards for them, and what they're looking at is the discrepancy between their achievement and this exalted standard. Even with my book, you know, if I set an ideal, like I wanted to be number one on the bestseller list for a year, and I merely have the satisfaction of knowing that some people have read it and see that as a huge discrepancy, I'm not enjoying my achievement.
I see.
So, in other words, there's work to do in order to have pleasures.
Exactly. Number five.
Appreciate the achievements of other people.
Yes.
Now, the obstacle to that usually is envy.
Yeah.
So, that's back to what I was saying about the Golden Gate Bridge. I really appreciate whoever was the engineer who doodled the designs on the tower.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. We rarely ever appreciate our own, and maybe even less so we appreciate those of others. I remember going through when my wife and I were visiting Ireland, and she was wanting to stop at some of the cemeteries along the way, and my first reaction was not a real positive one. But as I began to experience these places, I began to realize and understand the importance of what these cemeteries were about. These cemeteries were of the people who made the towns that these areas were in. In other words, if it wasn't for these people laying in the ground here, this town wouldn't exist.
Yes, that's the point.
Yeah. So, number four.
Is to increase your sense of mastery in activities. It's a little bit like being bold and enjoying. enjoying things that are safe but feel risky. The problem is not getting too risky.
Yeah, you don't want to do yourself in doing the daring do.
Right.
Number three.
Number three is to nurture your soul and spirit and to kind of accept moments of grace when you find them. And the obstacle to that is too much metaphysical contemplation, like, is it true? I think when we all are in our own unique individual ways, and sometimes in community ways, capable of moments of grace and just enjoy them for what they are.
Yeah,
moments of grace.
We can sometimes give ourselves brain cramps if we spend too much time asking, is it true? Just, it is.
Yes.
It just is. Number two.
It just is. And then the second, before the hitting the top, is to help others with their authentic needs, to try and make the world a better place in some way. And even for people in the midst of despair, like they feel they actually can't have any more satisfaction or they just cannot get what they really need from other people, if they go out and give something to other people, it brings that kind of goodness into the world, and it really can reverse mood.
I like that. Well,
sir,
go ahead.
And number one, I'd say is...
As a matter of fact, before you give me number one, I am actually going to potentially generate some stress amongst our listeners, because before we give out the number one, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back here on Tell Me Your Story.
Okay, it's time to play Name That Restaurant. Here are the clues. This mystery restaurant is located in Santa Barbara.
Well, that narrows it down to about 550.
This restaurant has indoor and outdoor seating.
Oh, now you're talking. There are only a couple of hundred restaurants that have outdoor seating.
Give up?
No, I'm looking at nippers.com. There are menus, recipes, the forum, restaurant news, and over 200 restaurant reviews written by professional food journalists.
Check out nippers.com, always serving up all the right answers about Santa Barbara restaurants.
Remember the stories your family used to tell?
July got married, 1913, when my father and my uncle came from Italy.
When was the last time you listened to the songs of your youth?
Well, close.
Yes, very swinging sound here in the Bilhart Underground. That's Wild Things.
Want to hear those voices and music again? Fast Forward can help. Fast Forward Audio Communications can transfer your records and tapes to CD so you can hear them again for the first time.
You're listening to a live transmission of the voice of astronaut Walter Chirac.
Those memories are priceless and are great to hand down to the next generation. Keep those memories alive. Call 805-708-9804.
That's the precious thing that I ever heard.
Fast Forward. It's the right direction for preserving your family memories. Just call 805-708-9804.
Are addictions ruining your life? Have you lost hope and long to discover help for a brighter tomorrow? Hi, I'm Candy Hoff, healing practitioner and angel intuitive counselor. I'll inspire and help you find your inner strength to regain clarity and balance in your life. Book your transformational session in downtown Santa Barbara by phoning 831-277-3716 or visit my website, angelhealinghouse.com.
So, Dr. Saunders, what are some of the causes of headaches?
Headaches can come on for many different reasons. Some people get headaches because of something they eat or something they're allergic to. So, for example, some people eat foods that contain MSG and get headaches from them and not even realize it. Another common cause of headache is people who take pain medication, often even for headache. As soon as they stop the pain medication, they get a headache. So, taking regular doses of pain medication, even stuff like Tylenol or Advil, when you stop taking them can bring on a headache in some people. They're called withdrawal headaches. And the only way to stop that is to not take any pain medication for at least 2 weeks. So if people want to come in and visit me in my new office, it's at 119 North Milpas. It's the Integrative Medicine Center of Santa Barbara. The phone number is 963-1824. That's 963-1824.
Take to that road, see how far it goes, and on that great ocean road, all the countries in our bones, all the trouble that you know empties out as you go.
Tell me your story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. My guest is Marty Horowitz, author of A Course in Happiness, Mastering the Three Levels of Self-Understanding. We're talking about the top 10, shall we say, maintenance techniques, if you will. And we stopped at number one. And Marty, what is the number one de-stressor?
Well, the number one is, I would call, the flow of generations. Goes two ways. One into the future, which is try and find a way to leave things better for the next generation. Many people do that just by recycling and thinking green. But, of course, other people have children or grandchildren, and they're trying to leave some kind of legacy for them. In writing the book, I was trying to leave a legacy for my kids who are grown up, and if it's published, then they'll read it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the flow goes the other way, too, which is our roots, our ancestors, people that came before, not necessarily our bloodline of our genetic structure, but all the people who have worked to develop the printing press, roads, ability to grow food and maintain things, and to just sort of appreciate history and to be making, in some small way at least, the history of the future, and to find a sense of connection fore and aft that way. The obstacle to that is bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't get enough from the people who came before me,
right,
or my parents. And why should I do anything for the kids? What have they done for me?
Yes, well, I know we've heard that many times as well. Marty, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Before I let you go, quick question for you. You've already mentioned that you were in the Navy and you've also were in the Forest Service and so forth. Could be doing a lot of other things right now, but you're doing this. Why this? Why now?
Well, I found it a great challenge after writing 16 books for professional people to try and write one for the intelligent, non-professional person. And so it was, in retrospect, a bold step for me, and I really enjoyed writing it, and I really enjoyed the idea of people getting it and reading it and benefiting from it.
Well, to take one of your points of the top 10 there, I am grateful for your having written it and for sharing yourself and your story and your book with us here on Tell Me Your Story. And I look forward to talking with you again. My thought was maybe you should come out with a course in happiness for dummies, but let's keep the bar raised high. Let's just keep it up there and not go there. But again, right. I thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, you're welcome.
You bet. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We're here every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, streaming live on the internet at richarddugan.com. That's RichardDugan.com. And until next Saturday, the day after Christmas, I encourage you to get out and enjoy some happiness. Love to all. Have a great week.